Barbarian Tribes of Rome. German Culture. War. Part 4. The magnificent swords of the Bronze Age, with their highly ornamented sword grips and beautifully finished blades, bronze axes of the different periods, and exquisitely shaped daggers, were the product of a highly developed technique of Bronze Age smiths, who made the molds, poured the metal, and polished the weapons with the greatest care. Seeing that all the metal had to be imported, it is clear that in addition to bronze axes, stone, bone, and horn must still have been used for making many of the work tools, at least. Probably only the wealthier, the leading men of the family and the community carried the expensive swords and axes of bronze. It was a long time before the sword became a common weapon in the hands of every warrior. For even in the early Imperial Roman times, the chief weapon of Germanic soldiers was the spear, not the sword. Tacitus is witness to the use of the spear, the javelin, or the throwing spear, and the shorter weapon, which was called the frema. Since, however, iron ore was available in many areas, did not need to be imported. In the centuries following the time of Tacitus, the sword became the chief weapon of the offense of the Germanic warriors. The iron sword became a relatively cheap product. Yet the smith had not acquired the art of making iron weapons which would stand up against heavy usage. The swords were worn out or damaged, especially when used against opponents wearing armor and helmets. This can be said in spite of the lavish terms bestowed upon certain well-known swords of the Germanic story, such as Siegfried's sword, the ancient heirloom in the Beowulf, and celebrated sword of Roland. It's rather significant that the swords of the epic stories were in most cases the work of elves and dwarves who were supposed to have intimate knowledge of the secrets of nature. In other words, these were swords of wish fulfillment, not swords in the hands of ordinary warriors. The representation of a Swabian warrior, although somewhat idealized, gives an approximate idea of the military equipment of that time. There were many varieties of swords, and the fashion changed from time to time. There were long swords and short ones, one-edged and two-edged, ewing swords and stabbing swords. The handle of the swords of the leaders were often inset with gold and silver. The sword was carried in a sheath of wood, leather, or even iron, fastened to the girdle or suspended from the shoulder. The shafts of the spears were usually of ash, and spearheads were made of iron. Some of them were designed for throwing, and evidently great skill and accuracy was attained in the art of throwing the spear. One is reminded of the spear cast which Hagen slew Siegfried in the Nibelung story, and the spear-throwing competition in which the wooers of Brunhilde had to engage. Axes were also often used as weapons, and in some cases the wooden club later provided with iron spikes. The bow and arrow, although used in hunting, does not seem to have been a favorite weapon until later times, but the Vikings used it freely. The main defensive weapon was the shield, which varied from oval to round shape. The shields were usually of wood, often with hide covering. The edge was made firm with an iron band, and in the center was an iron shield knob, the purpose of which was to protect the hand of the holder, also to serve as a ward against sword thrusts. Helmets and armor are sometimes found from the beginning of the present era, usually belonging to the leaders. The armor was of thousands of small rings called ringmail, and we can hear it frequently in the Beowulf epic, since by that time it had become much more common. Usually, however, the main body protection was made of leather, or as in the time of Tacitus, there was no body protection at all apart from the shield, the upper part of the body being completely naked. One is reminded of the berserkers of the Icelandic story who worked themselves into a state of mouth-foaming frenzy and fought in a partly or wholly naked state. It is evident from the equipment of the Germanic warrior was intended to emphasize attack rather than defense. It is also designed to provide freedom of movement during the battle. On the other hand, the Roman soldiers were often burdened with quite a weight of equipment. Apart from the throwing spears, the weapons of the Germanic warriors were designed for close combat. A large Germanic army would no doubt be armed in a rather varied manner according to the predilections of various tribes which composed the army, with the practice of painting the shields with tribal symbols. The wild shouting was intensified by holding up the shields. An army about to attack must have been an awesome sight, and one can well understand the anxiety of some of Caesar's soldiers shown before the meeting with Aravistus, an anxiety which Caesar was at some pains to dispel by a speech of encouragement to his troops. For the period under discussion, most of the movements of the Germanic tribes were by land. If by water, boats were merely used for the purpose of transportation. However, tribes along the North Sea coast were quite expert in use and manipulation of boats, as was shown by the Saxon depredations along the coast of northern France and along the English coast. There were some sea battles, but at this time the Germanic people had not developed the art of maritime warfare to the same degree as the Romans. The Nadam boat was an example of a larger type of boat used, and this led to the building of very efficient warships in the following centuries among the peoples of North German branch. Although the Germanic people placed the chief emphasis on infantry, they by no means neglected the training and use of cavalry, which was used for reconnaissance and flanking guards on the march and for certain specific tasks during battle and pursuit. We hear from Caesar that the Suebi had the custom of attaching a fast-running foot soldier to each mounted warrior who was able to keep up with the horse and assist in both defense and offense. We also hear from Caesar that the Germanic tribes across the Rhine, with whom he had contact, had excellent riders, and Caesar, to remedy his inferiority in cavalry, sent across the Rhine to these Germanic tribes for recruits. Caesar does not seem to have had a very good opinion of the horses ridden by the Germanic cavalrymen, since he mounted these recruits on horses requisitioned in territories under his control, instead of allowing them to ride their own. Presumably, the horses ridden by the Germanic people were of a smaller native variety, closely related to the Upper Paleolithic wild horse. For proper protection on the march, a long wagon train was accompanied by mounted men. This was no doubt the rule amongst the Germanic tribes. All of the important leaders were mounted, chief evidence being that in many cases the bones of horses being found buried with their masters in graves. Spurs were in common use and bridle bits, which are so essential for proper control of the horse. It was only much later that the stirrup was introduced. The stirrup has two functions: to assist in mounting and to provide a more secure seat on the horse's back when in action. It seems strange that such a simple aid to stability was not utilized much earlier. Certainly indicates excellent horsemanship on the part of the riders. The number of the personnel in the Germanic tribes on the move would appear to have been exaggerated, something which could very easily happen in estimating the number of people in a long wagon train winding over ill-conditioned roads and paths, and stretching for miles in a seemingly endless line. And fear, too, would tend to aggravate the reports of the number of people involved. The numbers of those who fell in battle must also have been greatly exaggerated, since in spite of the large families and the rapid rate of reproduction, the Germanic people would have been exterminated if the casualties as announced represent the actual losses. Total number of the Germanic people at the time of the beginning of the main phase of the migration could scarcely have been more than 4 million. There were many Germanic tribes and divisions of tribes, and in the 4th century they were scattered on over an immense territory, some in Eastern Europe or on the way there, some remaining in the area of the Eastern Baltic, some surging southwards in the central and southern Germany, some steadily driving across the Rhine and the Danube, some crossed the North Sea to take the British Isles, some remaining in Scandinavian homeland. So there's plenty of people around. Now that pretty much finishes our war aspect. The next time we're going to start looking at some of the very local objects, you know, such as, I think the next thing I'm going to talk about is fermented drinks. Every army needs to have some fermented drinks to keep morale up. Now, the source for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owens, Civilization of the Celts by Launay, Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.